Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go on a Monday. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we are live in Los Angeles on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1 right here. 1 hour from now, where Colin is right, where Colin is wrong. I'm just trying to rebound this week. A lot of wrongs last week. Just trying to rebound. Bailing a lot of water a week ago on that segment, and Joy Taylor is joining me, fresh off another vacation weekend. You went to Miami. It looks like you went to Miami.
I got a little sun. It wasn't all vacation.
Of course.
I was hosting my brother's foundation event.
Labor-intensive trip to Miami.
Yes, it was both.
It's great to see you.
Thanks.
Good Monday. Yes. And NBA is crazy. We got a Peyton Manning story coming up, but let me start with this. Is that one of the things I've noticed in my career, and I think Joy and I have talked about this before, we are now in the affirmation era, not the information era. Used to be I could present you with data and stats and win an argument, and it doesn't work that way. People just, liberals go to this channel, conservatives go to that channel. I can give you data. People just live in echo chambers. It's very frustrating. It's one of the reasons I don't take calls anymore. You could present me with a fact, I'd be going, oh, that's interesting. I'll change my mind. I can't change anybody's mind anymore. Nobody can change anybody's mind. And it wears me out. And Steph Curry is a great example of this. So Steph Curry, if 15 years ago, I would have said this. So there's going to be this guy that comes into the NBA, right? He's going to essentially eliminate the center position. What is he, a wizard, a sorcerer? No, he's just a player. What do you mean eliminates it? There'll be no more back to the baskets. Centers. Well, how? Well, I'll get to that in a second. He will change the math and geometry of the sport. I don't even understand what that means. What do you mean? Like a basket won't mean as much? Precisely. I'll get to that in a second. He will change college basketball and every gym in the country with every 13-year-old who now practices. And you'd be like, Game of Thrones, sorcerer. What is this? His name is Steph Curry. He's eliminated the back-to-the-basket center. He's made teams smaller as humans get bigger. He's changed the math of the sport. And oh, by the way, now, this is what basketball looks like at the college, high school, and AAU level. And I guarantee you by the beginning of next year, here's what you'll say. Yeah, Harden's better than Steph. Yeah, I'm more of a Westbrook guy. Really? I love Michael Jordan. Did he change the math? I love Magic Johnson. Did he eliminate centers? And by the way, if you want to see this meteor called Steph Curry, information over affirmation, he's on TV again tonight without the best player on the team, right? Are we sure KD's better than Steph? KD didn't eliminate centers. KD didn't change the math. KD didn't change gyms. Folks, we all know of the term called disruptors. Like the most famous is Uber's disrupted the taxi industry. For years and years, you know, you get off an airport or you go somewhere in New York or LA or any city in America, you get taxi, and then Uber. Oh, it's going on my phone. And now the idea of getting in a taxi for a lot of people is like, well, why? I can just do an Uber. They go where I want to go. It's a cleaner car, blah, blah, blah. We also know that Netflix has done this to television, been a disruptor. Amazon's done this for retail. We've talked about this before, right? They're disruptors. Could I make the argument? And I'm not counting Jackie Robinson with social ramifications. I'm just talking the actual game. Steph's the greatest disruptor, certainly in basketball, in sports history. I mean, Tom Brady didn't change the way football's played. I mean, Mike Trout's good and stuff. So was Willie Mays and Mickey Mantle. They didn't change the way the game was played. It is remarkable that Steph Curry, half of you would take Harden over him. Half of you would take Westbrook. Are we watching the same thing? Are we? Think about this. Dwight Howard. Now, think about this. I can remember when Dwight Howard was 16 years old, and I got a call from a guy named Brian Berger, worked at Nike. He said, there's this kid. There's this center. Oh, my God, he's going to change the game. Dwight Howard, 10 years ago, That was the last time he made an All-Star game. And it was ironically, coincidentally, the first time Steph made an All-Star team. Dwight Howard was your classic back to the basket. 22 points, 15 rebounds, shot blocker. Remember his shoulders? He didn't look like anybody else. And he's the taxi. And Steph was the Uber. Now you look at Dwight Howard, his last 8 years, it's like four teams, 4 years. It's not that Dwight Howard shrunk. He got less skilled. He was less talented. I mean, he had some surgeries, but he became the taxi and Steph was the Uber. Andre Iguodala was saying it yesterday. He said, Curry and Draymond Green, they're Brady and Gronk. They're Brady and Gronk. It's sometimes difficult to wrap your brain around things that you've never seen before. It's very possible the best presidential candidate's this little guy who's a mayor in South Bend, Indiana.
What?
He's not a governor. He's not in the military. He's not a titan. He's a mayor in South Bend. Well, I guy got a standing ovation yesterday in a rival network, right? I know it doesn't make any sense, but this little kid from Davidson who looks like one of your brother's friends in the neighborhood, like he's kind of slight and he's kind of small. It's the most relevant, the most game-altering, revolutionary basketball player ever. I'm done hearing how everybody's better. Information over affirmation. He's on TV again tonight. Watch. And this is not a shot at Charles Barkley, who I think is really talented. But a week ago, Charles Barkley's a smart guy. Remember, and Charles Barkley's opinion a week ago, I think, was a mainstream opinion shared by almost everybody.
The Warriors ain't got no chance of winning without Kevin Durant.
This series?
This series or any other series. He made them a dynasty. Let's don't sleep on that. People said, well, they won one. They did. They was terrific. And they won 7-2. They lost that series. But that was like 5 years ago. People act like that was 2 years ago. They did not become a juggernaut until KD got there. Everybody who knows basketball, he's the guy who made them a dynasty.
By the way, I think that's mostly what everybody thinks. Tonight, on display, again, the best ball handler, the best shooter, the most revolutionary player, a tremendous leader, virtually egoless. I know it doesn't fit what you think the best player in the world should look like or the most important player, but Steph Curry's it. Let me shift gears to this. This is crazy, right? Crazy fun. Peyton Manning, according to a story this morning, rumors flying that the New York Jets are pursuing Peyton Manning. All right, let's establish a couple things. Peyton Manning is great. Peyton Manning is smart. Peyton Manning could run a company. And then let me establish this. I think it'd be a bad move. It's almost disrespectful now. People say this all the time. That guy is smart. She's really smart. Those people are smart. But are they experts? Do we understand how hard it is to be an expert at one thing? Michael Jordan was great at one thing. He tried the second, baseball. Then he tried a third, being a front office executive. Look at Magic Johnson's career. Talk show, coach, president. If you can just be great at one thing, good luck being great at two. Because I almost don't think it's possible. I'm going to give you Chris Ballard's considered one of the best general managers, if not the best general manager in football. He's smart too, although he didn't play quarterback. He was an area scout. An area scout. Not a glamorous position, by the way. There's probably six living next to your house right now. He was an area scout for a decade. And then was given the director of player personnel. And then he was given the director of pro scouting. And then he was another footballer. And then all these years later, he's a big shot. How about Les Snead of the LA Rams? Les Snead, grad assistant, pro scout, director of play. 18 years of grinding. Folks, John Elway went to Stanford. John Elway, like Peyton Manning, came from a football family. Go look up the Elway family's history. John Elway, one of the most cerebral quarterbacks of our time. You watching John Elway in Denver? Back-to-back losing seasons? That doesn't happen in Denver. By the way, Magic, Lakers, Michael Jordan, President Wizards, Phil Jackson, GM Knicks, John Lynch, San Francisco, good, not special yet. It's almost like we're forgetting the rule. It's not about being smart. It's, are you smart enough and are you an expert at something? It's really, really hard. Peyton Manning's brilliant. But if you go look at the guys in this league, the Howie Roseman in Philadelphia, the Chris Ballards, the Les Sneeds, you start looking around these guys, they were grinding in the weeds in towns you hope your car doesn't break down in for 15 years before they got the job. These jobs are hard. Here's what this feels like to me, is that Adam Gase and Peyton Manning are buddies. They're friends. They respect each other. The Jets are kind of falling apart. Gase runs the GM out. And it kind of feels like the owner of the Jets feels, listen, I'll pay him a bunch of money. I'll bring in Peyton Manning. And it will feel like, optically, you know what? They always had this plan going on. This is perfect. This feels like a little bit of a Hail Mary. And by the way, that's not disrespectful to Peyton Manning because he's one of the smartest guys. But this feels like Le'Veon Bell could be leaving. GM gets fired. Oh, my Lord, nobody gets along. Oh, Peyton Manning's in. It's all good. No, Peyton Manning's in, and this was never the plan. This is not an opinion anti-Peyton Manning. He could succeed at a million things. Do we understand how hard it is to scout and to scour the country and to find talent at, you know, Towson State? Half this league is undrafted. Does Peyton Manning want to go on scouting trips to Division II in rural Colorado to find the next great running back? I don't like the move. I don't. And you would think, I like Peyton Manning. He's smart. But I think we're getting to the point now. It is not a celebrity position. It is a grinder position. And I think it's hard when you find people with $200 to $300 million of net worth. I think it's a tough ask.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So I sat and watched every second yesterday of the Raptors-Milwaukee. It's my job. It's what we do. And my big conclusion, and I felt this by about the middle of the second quarter on, these teams aren't beating Golden State. Come on. Come on. Stop. Love you, Drake. Love you, the people of Canada. Love Tim Hortons. It's Kawhi Leonard and four guys terrified to shoot in a big spot. This isn't even the NBA Finals. This is just the conference finals. You're at home. If you don't have confidence there, I mean, Fred VanVleet, the missed free throws, they are terrified. I mean, at some point, Kawhi Leonard, who is even more amazing than the word amazing, just took the game over, and it's remarkable a guy can dominate in small doses against other great players like that. Toronto's, they're not ready to win the NBA Finals. Come on now. And I'm watching this yesterday, and I'm thinking, what do we know about Milwaukee? The East is weaker than the West. The Celtics couldn't get their act together all year long, and Toronto's a one-man team. What do we know about Milwaukee? Well, during the regular season, yeah, Denver was great during the regular season. They couldn't be beat at home during the regular season. Then Denver couldn't get out of the second round and lost three games at home in the Mile High City. These teams are not beating the Warriors. Warriors are going to have rest. They're more experienced. You know, I was thinking about this. If the Warriors win tonight, and they're all beat up, not just KD and Boogie. I mean, Andre Iguodala, he played 18 minutes less than he did on average his playoffs, so he's hurt. They get 9 days off if they win in Portland tonight. Well, young teams like Milwaukee don't want 9 days off. They want to keep playing. Young teams have the energy. They overcome injuries. The Warriors have Steph's got a finger issue. Andre Iguodala had to go to the training room in the first half. KD isn't even practicing yet. Boogie is, but isn't ready to play. In 9 days, you're going to get a healthy Steph, a healthy Iggy, a healthy Boogie, and we'll see on KD. I imagine he'll play. They're getting a huge, huge sabbatical here that plays clearly in favor of the better team, the more rested team, the more experienced team, and then will be an equally healthy team. It's nothing against Toronto. It's nothing against Milwaukee. But you cannot watch Toronto and tell me they're anything more than a one-man team. You can't tell me they're more than that. You can't. And what do we know about Milwaukee? Well, during the regular season, young teams that don't have a title play their butt off in the regular season. I think Milwaukee's better than Toronto. I think they'll win the next two games and win the series. Well, they beat the Celtics. Celtics couldn't get their act together all year. Oh, they're dominating Toronto. And I've seen enough of Toronto. This is going to be so bad if they get to the finals, and I think they'd need an injury on the Bucks to get there. But that's my takeaway. I think this Warrior team without Boogie and KD, with a beat up Iggy, with Steph having a slightly dislocated finger, I think that version would beat Milwaukee and sweep Toronto.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Baker Mayfield came out of college, Oklahoma. Great program. And I said, listen, if I was GM, he's undraftable. Although I think he'll get drafted. I think he'll be fine. He's accurate. He's smart. He'll do fine. I don't want to deal with the nonsense. The grabbing, the throwing, and you know, it's not my stuff. But I brought him on the show because if I criticize somebody, I'd take Westbrook on the show. I want you to come on, fire back at me. And I did lie, and I've said this before, I think Baker's a good kid. I think he's a little immature in college. So was I, but I'm not a franchise quarterback, right? So I've always said, you know, franchise quarterbacks, I like boring guys. I like Andrew Luck. I like Russell Wilson. I mean, Tom Brady's married to a supermodel, and he's pretty much watching film all day. And so Baker Mayfield last week went back and forth. And, you know, a lot of my stuff is tongue-in-cheek with Baker. I'm not here to, you know, I thought it was pretty obviously tongue-in-cheek. He took shots at me, called me irrational. Anyway, so he was on Cleveland radio this morning, and he was asked about me, and I just want to, can I just play the tape? Let's just play the tape. It's on Cleveland radio somewhere in the atmosphere. Go ahead.
I don't know. I can't decide with him. He's just a character. You know, you'll go on the show and he'll be nice to you in person, then he'll bite his tongue and say something else the next week. So I think I'm done with him, but I'm not going to make any promises.
You got to prove something to him though this year, don't you? Baker, yeah. How about the expectations?
You know, I don't have to prove anything to him. Hey, to be honest with you, he doesn't really matter. His opinion doesn't matter either.
Well, I mean, that's certainly literally true. My opinion doesn't matter, and nor should it, by the way. By the way, this relationship, Baker, is not hard to figure out. You're a very talented quarterback. I'm a very opinionated generalist or opinion guy. And I didn't like your college junk. I still think you're a little noisy for me, but I do think you're talented, and I think you throw a better deep ball than I thought you would in the NFL. And I still believe you're going to have to overcome some dysfunction with that organization to get to your very best, which I think is higher than I thought. But I never thought you were a bust. I said that a million times. By the way, I talk about you, and much of the time it's very positive. But yes, sometimes you put yourself out there, and Russell Wilson doesn't, and Jared Goff doesn't. And sometimes I feel like you're building a brand before you build a career, which is kind of, I guess, what athletes do today, which I don't love. You know, build a career, the brand will come. Not build a brand while you're building your career. Mark Sanchez did a little bit of that. GQ magazine before he played. I'm not a big fan of that stuff. But I don't think I've always said, Baker's always welcome on the show. He can rip me. I'm okay with it. I like him. But he puts himself out there. The downside to building a brand before you've built a career is this. I mean, if you had two Super Bowls, yeah. What am I going to say? But when you've had a third place finish and everybody in Cleveland's guaranteeing a Super Bowl and you're building your brand, you put yourself out there. You put your chin out there, and sometimes, you know, I'll take a swing at it. But for the record, my opinion doesn't matter, and that is true. Right? I mean, it doesn't matter.
No. No one's opinion matters. The only opinion that should matter to anyone is your opinion of yourself. We're being literal here. So no, your opinion doesn't matter. My opinion doesn't matter. But we're in the opinion business, so we give our opinions. Right. So literally, what we get paid to do is give our opinions, and what Baker gets paid to do is play football.
Yeah. That is not insinuating we don't have...
That doesn't mean we're not right.
Yeah, almost always.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
You know, I tell my daughter this all the time is, you know, people only put the best parts of their life on Facebook. And I'm sure every parent listening tells their kids the same thing. That's not really life. Tom Hanks has had bad movies. So did James Dean. Marlon Brando had six utter bombs. Great bands had bad albums. Facebook and social media want you to believe that everybody eats every great meal and everybody's friends are gorgeous and every sunset's perfect. I live in Los Angeles. I haven't seen the sun in 4 days. Okay, that's not the way life is. It's the same with NBA legends. Like, does everybody realize it's not linear? I'll take the greatest players of all time, Magic Johnson. 1 year he was called Tragic Johnson because he whiffed in the finals. Michael Jordan's books got a couple ugly chapters. Couldn't win without Pippen. Quit for minor league baseball. Gambling rumors. Punched Steve Kerr in the face. You write the book on LeBron James. The decision wasn't great. He was afraid to post up J.J. Barea in the finals, and they lost to a Dallas team without a second dominating player. Those are the best players in the league. Those are the best. So let's go to Kevin Durant's book. I got to be honest, the worst chapter in Kevin Durant's book, I think we can officially say now, is Warriors were good before him. Warriors are good after him. That's the ugly truth, chapter 10. Outside of that, the first 9 chapters, rings, titles, adulation, money, fame, amazing, good dude. You know, Tom Hanks did Terminal. It's there on the resume. You can go to Google it. His worst chapter so far is, Golden State won before him. And it looks like they could probably win without him. All right. By the way, my favorite band of all time is the Eagles. They were great before Joe Walsh, and they were great with Joe Walsh. I don't think less of Joe Walsh. Like it's okay. This is going to be the little slight ding on Kevin Durant's career. Because, by the way, there used to be another ding, Joy, which was he couldn't win in Oklahoma City. But now, since he's left, we're all kind of like, well, Westbrook is kind of hard to play with. So I don't even think that's a chapter anymore.
Some things take a few years to actually see clearly. I don't know why everyone forgot that Golden State was good. Do you realize they went 7 games and was one Kyrie shot away from winning that championship?
And remember this. There's either a misunderstanding or people forget this. Why did Kevin Durant come to the Warriors? It wasn't because they needed him to win. No, remember what had happened. The Warriors had faced LeBron in back-to-back finals, and LeBron was better against the Warriors than any other team. In the two series, 33 points, 10 rebounds, 11 assists, shot 55%. Golden State could not stop LeBron. LeBron and Matthew Dellavedova, almost without Kyrie and Kevin Love, who got hurt, almost beat the Warriors. So Golden State's like, we can win without Kevin Durant, but we got to make LeBron play some defense on the other end. We got to get some size and length here. So Kevin Durant was never brought here to win a title. There was this thing called LeBron in his prime, and Golden State couldn't stop him. And they wanted to force LeBron to play a little defense. LeBron not have an answer every time he came down the floor. He would never brought in here. You know, Kenny Smith, I thought, put it perfectly yesterday.
They're a dynasty with Kevin Durant, but they're still a champion without him.
Yeah. I think social media has created this belief system that there's no bumps in life. I mean, years ago, there was this thing called Occupy Wall Street, where a bunch of 20-year-olds, camped out in Wall Street and said, "We want money." And I was thinking, you're 24. Who had money at 24? None of the guys on Wall Street. They're all 58 with gray hair. The reality is life's full of bumps and full of turbulence. And I mean, Warren Buffett's the best investor of my life. 10 years ago, he bought newspapers. Not a great decision. Don't believe in Facebook. That's not the way the world works. People aren't all beautiful. Not every meal is picture perfect. Sometimes you have a corn dog for dinner because it's the only thing in the refrigerator and you don't feel like getting in your car and driving over to Ralph's. That's okay. I think a lot of people think this is a ding on Kevin Durant. And I'm like, yeah, it's that little chapter. And I do believe it's a real chapter, which is Golden State won before him. And if you go look at Stephen Draymond's numbers since he left, this I think is not really disputable. When Steph has to be the centerpiece of the offense, he is. And he elevates his game. And when they need a more adult Draymond, not just quirky tough guy Draymond. And when they really need him to be a valuable cog, he kind of shapes up and he is. So, you know, Draymond's an interesting piece. He's more of an accessory. When you have Steph, Clay, and Durant, Draymond's personality, he's this annoyance. He's poking everybody in the ribs. But what's funny about Draymond, when Kevin Durant's gone and you now need 17 points, 11 rebounds, and 6 assists and 3 blocks, it's amazing that Draymond goes, okay, I'll shift into the player I'm capable of. Now they need me. So it's a little ding on Kevin Durant, but of all the Legends bad chapters, it's the best bad chapter.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Played almost a decade in the NFL. His brother now is an outstanding Pro Bowl offensive lineman for the Kansas City Chiefs. They co-authored a book called Eat My Schwartz. Mitch, this is Jeff. It is a pleasure to have you on today. Oh, you don't have to button that jacket. You're an offensive lineman, for God's sake.
I know, it's unbuttoned. It's unbuttoned. Yeah, it's more comfortable that way.
So what do you make of Peyton Manning? Somebody told me today, somebody texted me during the show on this device and said Peyton wants the job.
Why? Why do you want the job?
I don't
get it.
He can do better, right? Or does he like Sam Darnold and think, for 12 years, I got my guy?
Or he doesn't have to do it at all and just live his retired life doing the 50-part ESPN series he's doing and just enjoy retirement. Maybe he loves Adam Gase. Maybe they're close. They've worked together before. And your point, maybe he likes Sam Darnold too and he feels this is the opportunity to get in. I will have a lot of control if I come here because ownership wants me, obviously Peyton Manning. But great players often don't make great general managers and often don't put in the work. We saw with Matt Johnson today speaking about the Lakers and dysfunction. He didn't put in the work to do it. Not all these guys want to put in the work. I personally, if I was Manning, I wouldn't take the job, but I guess with Gase and Darnold, there's some familiarity there. I just wouldn't do it. Why would you want to do Peyton Manning? Hire someone who is young and up and coming, who's been in the business, who's a great scouting director. We've seen that work with Chris Ballard. We've seen it work with a bunch of guys. Go ahead and do that.
Well, I think also, here's my concern. Because Sam Darnold's on a rookie contract,
right?
What the Jets need to do for the next 2 years, because they're going to have to pay Sam in 2 more years, they're going to have to nail the draft in the next 2 years. This is what Green Bay's done before they had to pay Aaron Rodgers, because you're going to have to get cheap labor. Well, Peyton may be very good at a lot of things, but do I really think he's great at finding slot receivers at Central Washington University? What you need now for the next 2 years is just a scouting expert, because you're going to have to pay Darnold a fortune in 2 years.
100% agree. Manning was going to know quarterbacks, obviously, but they don't need a quarterback. They need him to find another left tackle eventually. They need him to find more weapons for Sam Darnold. They need him to continue to find pass rushers. He has not done this before. Now you're going to throw him in here. I mean, maybe you hire a great scouting director, guy who could do pro and college personnel stuff, but why don't you go find a young up-and-coming guy who's been doing it for a while and bring him in? Now, maybe they're not enticed by this opportunity either. That's part of this as well.
Right.
Maybe you don't want to play coach somewhere, work somewhere with an ownership that's kind of dysfunctional like this.
Yeah, to me in the NFL, if you get the quarterback, I'd take a job. I think that's the one most attractive thing. If Sam Darnold, I can look at that and go, I can ride with him for a decade. If you don't have a quarterback, I don't care how smart you are. Andrew Luck succeeded even with a GM before Chris Ballard that was considered man overboard. If you get the quarterback right, it takes care of everything.
It does. But again, I enjoy retired life so much that I couldn't imagine working the hours that were needed to be a general manager. You have to watch that film. You have to go travel everywhere to colleges and watch these guys play. You have to do the combine stuff. To me, it's so many hours for a guy who's just retired and he's staying busy, right? He's doing the ESPN series, he's have appearances, whatnot. To me, does he want to go back to living that life of being in the office at 6, leaving at midnight every single day? To me, it doesn't sound enticing.
You have been a supporter of Odell Beckham Jr.
Yes.
I like him. I think he's a good kid. I don't think he was chaotic at LSU.
Yeah.
Or his first year in New York. I think as the Giants got chaotic, he got chaotic.
Yeah.
I was surprised at what I perceived to be an overreaction on Twitter last night toward me.
Yeah.
What do you make of this? He signs with Cleveland, and their coach says last week, I'd rather not have him here if he can't get his mind right. It's 65 days. Like, so what? I'm not even going to have an opinion on it. How did it land for you?
Yeah, I don't quite understand this. I understand, and I think Odell's out in Los Angeles now, right? He's here working out. I get it. It's beautiful weather. The UCLA facilities are nice. He was at USC, too. They're nice. I get you want to be here, but I'd be with your teammates. You sign with you're traded to a new team, brand new offense, young quarterback. You got to figure out how to work with all these pieces in place. Same with Le'Veon Bell. I think he should be there too in New York. Both these guys should be there working out with their guys. I get it's voluntary. I get you don't want to get hurt, but learn the playbook with your guys.
How long does it take to learn a playbook?
So different for every position, obviously, but I've contended this for a while now, and I've actually asked Bruce Arians this. So he's backed me up on this on another program. It takes 8 to 10 weeks of the regular season for your offense to fully function properly. Because you have to see every look against every play and different conditions of the game and different things. It takes 8 to 10 weeks to really get that offense going. What Sean McVay did is not normal to come in right away, but that was because they were so bad the year before. It's going to take Freddie Kitchens now, who's not just an OC. He's the head coach. He's got to manage the entire team. He's got to manage situations differently now, being the head coach, not the OC. It's going to take time for this offense to fully function. And with Odell not being there, it's not the biggest thing. He's a wide receiver. He's not a left tackle. He's not a quarterback. But the timing, you don't get that timing as much in camp anymore because you don't practice as often anymore. So I think he's got to be there. The limited reps matter and do the same with Le'Veon Bell not being in New York. They just paid you, man. Show up and be with your teammates.
So this is, I don't want to make too much of this, but it is interesting. I think Kyler Murray is going to be fascinating to watch in Arizona. I do not believe he's Russell Wilson. I don't think he's that thick. I don't think he's that tall. Yeah. I don't care what the combine number said. So a picture came out this weekend of rookie class, and he is next to a receiver who's listed at 5'9",
yeah.
And he looks significantly shorter than a guy that's 5'9". Am I making too much of this to say if I'm Arizona right now, I'm a little worried?
Murray's the only player I've ever seen at the combine be taller than his listed weight. Remember, the Oklahoma strength coach came out and said he is 5'9 and 3/4. I promise you that. And obviously he was 5'10. Look, it doesn't really matter, honestly, because if you're 5'10 or 5'9, it doesn't matter, in my opinion. It's not being 6'1 or 5'10, right? But it's just a funny story to keep talking about because remember, he refused to get height and weight at his pro day in Oklahoma, right? I think he's probably back down to 190. Russell Wilson got to 205 from 220 in college. Remember, he lost weight
because
and went back up. Murray had to gain 15 pounds.
Yeah, because Russell wanted to lose weight to run a faster 40.
Correct. His stature worries me a little bit, but I'm not sold on Cliff Kingsbury and the offense working in the National Football League.
See, that's the bigger issue.
Four wide receivers. We've seen all the reports. I get it. People want so badly for the NFL game to look like the college game, and it doesn't. There are the best offenses, the top five offenses last year were as pro style as you get. There are some wrinkles, right? The Chiefs do some things a little bit from the college game, but their base offense is what Bill Walsh installed in the 1970s, right? Like that is what they do. New Orleans Saints, New England's not the West Coast, but they have the same system and they incorporate little wrinkles here and there. It does not work on a full scale for many reasons. One is because the depth of your team, you only dressed 46 guys, right, including the third quarterback sometimes. You can't rotate as much. Guys get hurt on the edge. Like you just don't have the opportunities you do in college in the NFL. And this offense worries me. You're going to put your defense. We saw with Chip Kelly, when you have a bunch of three and outs, your defense on the field way too long, they're going to get gashed. And so I want to see what Kingsbury does, but I don't buy four wide receivers, even if one of them is a tight end, as being a base offense that you can win consistently in the National Football League.
Jeff Schwartz joining us almost a decade in the NFL. Big Ben, we predicted on this show, watch him curry favor with his new teammates. Yes. Is that he got married, had kids, and wasn't as great a teammate, right?
Yes.
And now suddenly, after the AB situation in Le'Veon, my prediction is you watch him go back to being like a guy's guy.
Yeah.
So video of him at his lake house, and it's his receivers and his running backs. And my takeaway is, Jeff, he's going to have a great year.
I think he's going to have a great year even outside of this. It's the first time in his career, at least in a long time, let's say, where this entire team, including him, has been motivated and also been able to say, no one thinks we're going to win. Like they have the underdog card for once in a long, long time. And obviously, he heard the criticism. He heard what Le'Veon Bell said, what obviously Antonio Brown said. And he's going out and trying to fix that. He's trying to be a better leader, be closer to his players. He's heard that, and it's good. It means he's listening to criticism about himself. But to me, I've said this since the odds came out. The Steelers to win the AFC North is stealing. The plus money on that is unbelievable value over the Browns that are even money to win the South and the North. What have they haven't been in the playoffs since 2002. Now we're crowning them champs of the AFC North.
So you like the Steelers to win the division?
Yes. I love the value of the bet, too. Like, plus 200, plus 180. It was at plus 250 at one point as well. They have a great offensive line, a Hall of Fame quarterback. They still have weapons. They lost Antonio Brown, but they still have Juju, James Washington. They have James Conner. Their defense, that Bush was a huge draft pick for them to add him. They can still rush the passer. Got to get better in the back end. The first time in forever a veteran team with a great coach is motivated like this to show people they can do without their star wide receiver, which we've seen teams win without star wide receivers.
Do you, by the way, do you bet the NBA?
Yes.
That's what I noticed.
It was good yesterday. I had a good day yesterday.
So you took, bet yesterday?
No, I took the Raptors first quarter, first half, and Bucks third quarter.
Oh, you're one of those gamblers.
Yeah. It's sometimes not good, but yeah.
you're all in on quarter betting, Doug.
I think in the NBA playoffs, quarter betting is almost better than game betting. Because I feel like it ebbs and flows. Like, you have a home team, the Raptors, down 0-2, going back home. They're going to play well in the first half.
Yes.
And then the better team at times takes over. Like, I bet Portland first quarter of game 3, which they won, and I bet the Warriors money line to win the game. Like, Portland comes out hot, and then the better team wins in the end.
You're very smart, Jeff Schwartz. You're very, very smart. Good seeing you, buddy.
Yeah, same here.